I'll call the Senate Commerce Committee to order. A quorum is present. Senator Marty, it looks like you are ready to start us off with Senate File 2192.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate File 2192 is a bill from the Pollution Control Agency. It's a continuing a process. We think we had a bill back in 2001 or so on banning mercury thermometers for the most part. In 2007, we continued the process with both mercury and lead. And this bill continues the direction we've been heading. We've been trying to address concerns along the way, and I think industry has been changing over the years, recognizing the toxic problems with these substances going into our waste stream. And so this bill would go further, banning wheel weights that contain lead or mercury, and ban on mercury balancing, dampening weights and counterweights. I think it closes up a few more of the ban on the sale of mercury thermometers. We extended it for some farm applications 10, 12 years ago. Mercury thermostat manufacturer responsibility reporting. I think this bill is a continuation of where we've been in the past. I believe there are some amendments to the bill, and I'm not even sure who. I know one of them is from the other one. I think may have come from the auto dealers or something. But I'm happy to have testimony from anybody you have, and I'm not sure if Pollution Control Agency is here. I think they may be across the hall and coming over here in a minute. But I'm happy to stand for questions or PCA is here. All right. So if maybe they want to.
So Senator Marty, we've got a couple of people listed. Do you have supporters you would like to hear from first?
Yes, we'd like to have PCA first.
Okay. Welcome, sir, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is John Gilkison. I'm with the Pollution Control Agency. And would you like me to speak to the sections in the bill or take questions?
If you have comments, let's do that first and then.
Sure. I'll just go through it very briefly. Sections 1 and 2 change the definition of mercury-containing product that is subject to labeling and disposal prohibitions in Minnesota so that we cover all mercury-added products. Section 3 addresses thermostats, and we've had a commitment from the thermostat industry since 1992 to operate end-of-life collection programs, and we're bringing that into conformity with the other product stewardship requirements we have in Minnesota law, and we're giving them antitrust protection with that explicit responsibility. We are currently negotiating with the thermostat manufacturers regarding a wholesaler participation requirement for their program, and have general concurrence from Honeywell, but they need to consult with their colleagues in the industry to make sure that the language is good. Section 4 would reflect the fact that all federal rules no longer require the use of mercury thermometers. The National Institute of Standards and Technology has stopped calibrating mercury thermometers after doing it for 110 years. They recognize that mercury thermometers are no longer the standard. There are other technologies that are better. And so we are essentially moving out of that completely with an exemption process for people who might have an unusual application. We're also negotiating with the Iron Mining Association on that to make sure they have what they need. We didn't have that amendment ready today. I apologize for that. The fifth section is a ban on mercury balancing, dampening, and shock-absorbing products. There are a couple of products like this made, contain about 30 pounds of mercury, and they're very easy to have a very large and expensive spill with that. They're not necessary products. Section 6 is a prohibition on the sale and installation of lead and mercury wheel balancing products. This is an area also where we have alternatives. The new car manufacturers are all lead-free, but in terms of the aftermarket, we're about half lead and half non-lead products right now, and the agency's been working on this for many years. Our state fleet was the first state fleet to go lead-free. We piloted the 3M, what's now the 3M wheel weight system, and we've been negotiating with the Auto Dealers Association on this, as Senator Marty mentioned the amendment. And so this would phase out the sale and installation of lead wheel weights in favor of the non-toxic alternatives.
There are questions for the testifier. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, sections 5 and 6, so has there been conversation for a while then with these industries, or was this a sudden a shift, or where were we at on the conversations that took place ahead of time?
Chair and Senator, in terms of sections 5 and 6, this is a conversation that has been going on for over 10 years. I do have a support letter from Plomco, which is one of the major wheel weight manufacturers, in favor of the Minnesota legislation. The other two major lid wheel weight manufacturers have promised those letters. I'm sorry, I don't have them yet from them, but this is an issue that has been under discussion for a long time. And as I mentioned, the new car manufacturers are all lead-free, and all new vehicles sold in Minnesota since about 2010 have been lead-free.
Other questions for this testifier? And members, my intent is to take whatever testifiers we have, and then we'll take amendments. So, Senator Marty, do you have anyone else? Otherwise, I will call on Ms. Backus.
Mr. Chair, I do have one other witness who I'm not sure she was going to come speak in favor of her, just if there were concerns, and maybe she was going to speak to one of the amendments. So go ahead with your list.
Okay. The next person we have that I know of is Amber Backus with the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. Welcome, Ms. Backus, if you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amber Backus, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. And besides selling new vehicles, we also service them. And to Senator Gazelka's question, we were not made aware of this initiative until the bill was introduced this legislative session. Our repair shops are not familiar with alternatives when I did a quick survey of if they know of alternatives in the marketplace. So we have asked the agency for some more information about this issue, which they have provided. And in the House, we did agree to language that would provide an education component, so there was outreach to the industry, so they would be made aware of alternatives in the marketplace and could increase their compliance. We've also asked for a delayed effective date, which the agency has agreed to, and I'm hoping that amendment will be here today from the PCA. And it looks like it is. So that would be positive. But we are still bringing our members up to speed on this. Some of them are predominantly using lead. They are disposing of it properly through recycling programs. But there definitely needs to be an education and outreach piece so they are familiar with other alternatives in the marketplace, which some of them have not been up until the introduction of this bill.
Question, Senator Gazelka.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that to the new testifier, because I want there to be dialogue and communication, and I hate it when we drop stuff on people. And what I'm wondering is a couple questions. If they're all using, or many using lead, what is the cost going to be for them to switch over? And then what is the time frame that you were thinking of that would be an adjustment time frame that you would need?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, I am not familiar with the alternatives myself. I know Mr. Gulkison did provide some, and he said that they are comparable in cost. Maybe the 3M product costs a little more. But I'm trying to get some more information from my members just to verify with them. As far as the time frame for compliance, ideally we would have liked to see July 1st, 2016, so we didn't interfere with parts contracts and or inventory issues. But this does go to July 2015, so that's definitely a step in the right direction.
Other questions? Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Marty, do you know, will there be sufficient supply of non-lead weights when this goes into effect? Are we going to have that stream we're going to need?
Mr. Chair, let me ask Mr. Gilkison to respond to that and also the cost issue.
Mr. Gilkison.
Chair and Senators, in my conversations with the wheel weight manufacturers, they've indicated to me that the non-lead products are considerably less expensive now. They have made major investment in the manufacturing capacity for that. They have more than enough capacity to meet the entire U.S. and North American demand right now, and they can make that transition to supply Minnesota with non-lead within 6 months, working through the supplier network that serves the individual facilities in Minnesota.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames.
Could you tell me, sir, how many pounds of weights we're currently manufacturing, and of that, what percent is lead?
Chair and Senator, the U.S. annual consumption of weights is about 18,000 tons of lead. currently, and that's half of the wheel weight market.
Members, any additional questions for either of these testifiers?
One last one.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the other testifier, if the effective date was instead of January 1st, 2015, January 1st, 2016, would you be supportive of the bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazalka, I think it would help assuage some of our concerns, most definitely. I think there just is a lot of apprehension about not having been brought into the discussion sooner on this, so the extra time would be appreciated.
Senator Dams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could you tell me, ma'am, I think you mentioned something about parts contracts. Is this going to be an issue if it's put in force on July 2015?
Yes.
Is this going to be an issue with contracts you currently have already signed and are obligated to carry forward?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, I'm still waiting for that verification from our members and their parts and service shops. I've asked that question because I think some do have them on an annual basis, just to make sure we're not interrupting those.
Members, further questions for either of these testifiers? Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate File 2192? Seeing no one, members, I know we have a couple amendments. I would call on Senator Jensen first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A3 amendment.
And Senator Marty, have you gotten copies of both
yes,
of these?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I've been talking with them as well.
Thank you. Senator Jensen to the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment adds some clarifying language for intentionally added chemical. And it also provides and explains what de minimis level for formaldehyde and has been worked out by the proponents and the industry to add clarity to how to make that work.
Questions, comments, discussion on the A3 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I think there may be witnesses who want to speak to this. I believe this was a bill that was passed last year, and I believe there's been agreement on both sides to it that this is a reasonable de minimis amount, and I think this is language that was put on in the House as well. But.
Testimony on the A3 amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. My name is Julie Padilla. I'm with Larkin Hoffman Law Firm, and I'm here representing the Personal Care Product Council. Senator Marty's correct. This is an amendment clarifying language that was passed as part of the formaldehyde ban on children's products last year. We'd had these discussions, started them last year. Language wasn't prepared in time to get this accomplished as part of that bill. So we came back this year, and this is kind of an awkward place to put it, but the best place that's moving in both the House and the Senate. It was added as an author's amendment in the House in civil law last Friday as well.
Further discussion on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The A3 amendment is adopted. We also have the A4. Is there a member that is looking to move the A4 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I hope somebody will. This is an amendment, the one that was the auto dealer one we were working with them on.
Senator Gazalka.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I want to offer it, but I was going to see if I could change line 1.7 to January of 2016 if the author would be.
Well, Senator Gazalka, why don't you move the A4, and then if you want to amend the amendment, we can do that. Senator Gazalka moves the A4 amendment. Senator Gazalka.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question would be to Senator Marty, too. You heard the testimony of the industry, and I'm trying to find a way to support what you're trying to do, but give them a little extra time. And if you will amend line 1.7 or amend the amendment, that it would simply say the effective date, this section is effective January 1st, 2016, I would be supported.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Marty.
Yes, I can live with that. I don't know that we need it. Again, the cost, there are the same suppliers who are supplying the auto dealers, and I'd rather it be earlier, but I can live with the January 2016.
Mr. Stang, would you give us a suggestion on line 1.7?
Mr. Chairman, members, I think the easiest way, if you look at line 1.7 of the amendment, strike January and insert 2015. That language within quotes there, and strike July and insert 2016, and I think that'll do it.
All right. Senator Gazalka moves to amend the A4 amendment per Mr. Stang's suggestion of striking January and inserting 2015, striking July and inserting 2016. Any questions on the amendment to the amendment? Any discussion? All those in favor of the Gazelka amendment to the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Any discussion or further questions on the underlying A4 amendment? Senator, no. On the A4 amendment. All those in favor, as amended, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The A4 amendment is adopted. Further discussion? Senator Carlson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm wondering on page 4, we talk about new motor vehicles. A person may not sell a new motor vehicle or aircraft. Is that retroactive to a vehicle that has been assembled and produced for a particular model year but has lead weights on it?
Senator Carlson, anyone who wants to take that? Is that?
Yes, please.
Senator Marty or Mr. Gilkinson?
Chair members, could you repeat the question, please?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hilkerson, on page 4, subdivision 4, in line 4.25, it talks about new motor vehicles that may not sell a new motor vehicle or aircraft equipped with a weight or other product if it has lead or mercury. And a new motor vehicle is described up on 4.15 as a vehicle that has not been previously sold to a person except as a distributor, wholesaler, or motor vehicle dealer for resale. Does that go for a product, for a motor vehicle that has been made or eventual sale, but is still a new motor vehicle? Does that mean that after this date that vehicle cannot be sold without having the lead taken off of its wheel weights?
Senator
Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, I believe all new cars since 2010 have been in the country have been sold without the lead. So you'd have to have a very old new car that's been sitting around in a dealer showroom for 4 or 5 years now in order, 5 or 6 years by then, in order to have that problem. So,
Members,
thank
any...
you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Carlson, members, any further discussion on Senate File 2192? Anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate File 2192? Seeing none, does somebody want to move Senate File 2192 as amended?
So moved.
Senator Pappas moves Senate File 2192 as amended, recommended for passage and...
I think it goes to the floor.
Recommended for passage as amended and to sent to the Senate floor. All those
Chair?
In favor, signify.
Mr. Chair, I'm told from PCA it might have to go to Judiciary. I haven't figured out what the issue is, but antitrust. Oh, there's the antitrust provision for them in the manufacturer responsibility section. So I guess it. Judiciary has requested it.
So, Senator Pappas, your motion is to recommend. As amended to and sent to Judiciary. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion passes. Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
The next bill on the Commerce Committee is Senate File 2078, Senator Pappas, Minnesota Secure Choice Retirement Savings Plan Establishment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe before my comments, we should pass out the A6 delete all amendment so we have that version before us.
I think I know what it does, but why don't you start explaining it as it moves around the
floor here. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm proposing the A6 amendment to Senate File 2078, which will study a series of questions, including the state of retirement security in Minnesota. It will also include the potential for a state-administered plan to meet the retirement savings needs of workers without access to workplace retirement savings plans, both alone and in comparison to private and public alternatives. and finally, the different options for structuring such a potential state-administered plan and the effects of those options. We are facing a serious crisis of retirement insecurity in our state and in our country, a crisis in which 44% of U.S. workers aged 40 to 65 will not have enough retirement income for even basic expenses in retirement, and in which hundreds of thousands of Minnesota households nearing retirement age, 55 to 64, face the hard choice of living in or near poverty on nothing but Social Security, or continuing to work indefinitely into their retirement years. In testimony in the State and Local Government Committee, we heard no disagreement about the crisis and the need to make it easier for individuals to save their own money for their own retirement. So the A6 amendment before us asks MMB to look into and report back to the legislature on three areas of study. First, in questions 1 through 5, this amendment would investigate the retirement security landscape in our state, including necessary retirement savings and the progress of Minnesotans to achieve those savings, as well as the barriers Minnesotans face in savings for retirement, including lack of access to workplace retirement savings options, and the impact on our state's budget and our economy of insufficient retirement savings. The second set of questions in numbers 6 through 9 address the potential for a state-administered retirement savings plan to meet the needs of workers who lack access to workplace retirement savings plans, including a definitive answer about the effects of the Federal Employee Retirement Income Savings Act, or ERISA, on such a plan, existing consumer protections for plan participants, a comparison between a potential state-administered plan and other options available both through the private market and the federal government, like MyRA, and alternative actions the state might take to achieve our shared goal of addressing the retirement security crisis in our state. The final set of questions that this study will address in numbers 10 through 15 deal with the different options for structuring such a potential state-administered plan, including investment strategies and contribution mechanisms, the effects of those options on suitability, risk, participation in savings rates, discouraging employers from dropping existing plans, and projected costs and fees, including in comparison to privately available options. In conclusion, let me say by drafting this amendment, we work to include all those questions raised by the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council, so that we may not all agree about the need for a state-administered retirement savings plan. We can ensure that this study will be a robust look into this potential solution from all sides. As such, I hope to have addressed the majority of those concerns raised in the previous hearing on this bill, and I would ask your support for the A6 amendment and for moving the bill out of committee today. Thank you.
Okay, we're on the A6 amendment.
Is this an author's amendment, then?
It's an author's amendment. Senator Pappas, you can move your...
Oh, I'll move the A6 amendment.
On the Pappas motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Discussion on the bill as amended. Senator Kosalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, I, prior to being elected to the Senate, I had my Series 6 and 63 license, so I was involved in selling some of the investments needed to fulfill your goals here. And I'm trying to understand, first of all, what you see as the problem that you're trying to solve here, because these are available to people right now.
Mr. Pappas.
Yes, individual retirement accounts are available, but have only penetrated 6% of the potential market, and I believe 40%? 44% of 40%, somewhere in that, could potentially be in a pool like this. People are not saving for retirement. They have, you know, people barely have are a paycheck away. They have maybe $3,000, very minimal amount saved for retirement. It's not happening. And now the private sector is, some workplaces don't even offer individual retirement savings accounts through the workplace. So this would really be an option for people who maybe feel overwhelmed by the marketplace. They don't know how to do investing and make investment decisions, because the State Board of Investment would make the investment for them, and it would be a payroll deduction, so it would be an easy way for them to save, you know, $5 a paycheck. and starting very young with compounding, they could potentially have some savings. I mean, I feel like retirement is a three-legged stool. If you have access to a defined benefit plan, I'm strongly in favor of that. Social Security, which is really just supposed to be kind of a last resort, but people are relying on it, but it should just be a third of what you have, and personal savings. And so with this attempt, we're trying to get everyone to have a defined contribution plan where they can actually start putting that money away starting at a very young age.
I guess so, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is more just comments being in the industry. And first of all, I'll say I appreciate your effort. I think there's no doubt that people are not saving enough money. I think one of the reasons is we take too much from them in taxes and they don't have anything left. But as far as, you know, government, just saying. But, we've tried a couple different government programs, MNsure, and I think, that foray I don't think is working. We're looking at PEEP, for health insurance for educators, and we're now talking about kicking in $1 million a year to help them with their administrative costs. And at the end of the day, it still comes back to they need to be educated about this. If you're going to buy any type of retirement plan, you still need somebody, even if it's $50 a month, to really help you determine what the suitability is. Whether you should be in following the S&P 500 or whatever you're going to do. So I just don't see the benefit other than how do we encourage people to save. And so that's why I see no upside of it, but I do see us kind of foraying into another private sector domain and saying we can do it better in government, and we generally don't.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazalka, it's really part of why we're going slow here, why this is a study. It's also looking at what's available in the private marketplace. Why is the private marketplace not able to penetrate this group? This would be one option that we would look at. I mentioned before that I think the investment, the financial literacy level needed to do investment is a challenge, and this if we came back to the legislature and the legislature decided they wanted to go down this road, the investments would be by the State Board of Investment, Senator Gazalka. So they have about an 8.5% investment rate of return over, 20 years. So they have a very good investment rate of return. It's very secure there. Before they could do that, there would have to be $1.5 billion of assets. So, I mean, this is a very fairly complicated issue, which is why we want to do this study to see if we think that would be viable. But so far, we know this, is that people are not saving for retirement, for whatever the reason is. I mean, maybe you're right that they're overtaxed. So then maybe we need to look at the tax incentives for savings, look more strongly in that direction. Maybe they just think they'll never retire. They're going to win the lottery before they retire. And there needs to be some education about how important this is, that this does need to be a priority. When you're young, it's hard to make it a priority. Retirement seems like something very far away. But you can't just start thinking about retirement when you're 50 years old or 55 years old.
Senator Pappas, a question I have. Can the 8.5% return, but can this private sector money be commingled with the State Board of Investment, the state employees?
Mr. Chairman, no, it cannot.
Okay, so you mentioned 8.5. That's been a pretty good
It can be co-invested, but it can't be commingled. So the same investing strategy they use with public employment dollars, public employees' dollars, could also be used with this fund for the private sector.
Not yet.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Pappas. We talk about such a small or a large number of folks that are not investing in retirement, and you were talking about people with a low amount to invest. As Senator Gazelka alluded to, I too have my 6 and 63 or did, and I don't think that it's a problem finding a place to invest the money and finding folks to invest it. It's about educating the people. So when we take a look at this, question I have, Senator Pappas, is at what point are we going to be encouraged then to start doing matching funds and things like that? If we invest the money in the state is good. The state of Minnesota, if they invest the money in a investing account, they're going to have fees and stuff that I don't believe right now are included in that 8.5% because that's a state program. And if we start investing it for the private, I don't believe we're going to get by without some fees, and those fees are going to reduce that. My concern is that this is opening up another situation to where in a few years we're going to be subsidizing this program. We're already talking about an appropriation to carry out what's in this bill now, and I'm not sure that we're going to accomplish what we want to accomplish. We're going to spend a lot of money, and pretty soon we're going to be subsidizing this program. I think we have folks out there that can do the job now. We just need to get the people to understand that they need to invest for the retirement. So maybe instead of doing something like this, we ought to be looking at putting the money in an education process to educate the people the importance of retirement and the importance of start saving at this at a young age.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Dames, thank you for those comments. Certainly, financial literacy and educating the public is of primary importance, I mean, not only in the retirement area, but in many other areas as well, saving for college, for example, for your children, because college has gotten so expensive. I do want to point out on line 1.24 to 1.26, part of the study would be to make sure that the plan is self-sustaining. There is no expectation here that there would be any government subsidy involved. Yes, there are fees involved. The State Board of Investment fees tend to be lower, but the fees have to come out of the interest that's earned by the investment.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, what I'm interested in particular in this bill, is questions that you're asking, like on 2.11, the process where individuals or employers would contribute to their plan, what the participation rates are, the savings rates, those types of things. Are there other barriers other than just not having the money to do it on your own as an individual versus having a bigger plan, say you get it from your employer?
I'd like Mr. Elliott to address that question.
Mr. Brian Elliott.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Brian Elliott, the Service Employees International Union. What we know historically is that over the past 30 years, while financial literacy rates have gone up, personal retirement savings have gone down. The primary factor in the academic literature is that the primary change has been access to save through workplace plans, in part because smaller employers are less likely to offer a retirement savings plan than larger employers. And today, in comparison to 30 years ago, we have more individuals working for smaller employers than we did 30 years ago. And so what we know is that what's called behavioral economics in the academic world is that when people have access to save through their employer and when their coworkers are also saving through their employer, they're much more likely to save for retirement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, just one area. If you're a lower income person or family, you're going to be eligible for a Roth IRA, and you can contribute $50 a month, whatever. I mean, you can put in a smaller dollar amounts, and you don't need your employer. And it's in my opinion, the better way to go anyway, because you can take out the dollars at any time in the future without a penalty except for the gain. And so, we already have systems in place, but to Senator Dames' point, people just aren't aware of some of the options they can do. And so, I think education is a would be a more effective tool than the path we're trying to accomplish here.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess for me, I would like to have some of this information that would come out of this report, because whether we think that there are systems available, people are not utilizing them. And if it's just education, this report should address some of those questions. So in order for us to get a good return on this investment to have this study, if we take a look at each one of these questions, I think that would provide us some of the answers to why. Why are people not participating? And I'm interested as a legislator in finding out the answers to those particular questions, and this study would allow us to do that.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to echo a little bit of what Senator Jensen just commented on, because that's my concern. We're not talking about assessing the marketplace at this point. We're talking specifically about assessing a state-run retirement plan where we already have market options. And so to me, it seems like this study already has a predetermined conclusion. And I would prefer something more along the lines of what Senator Jensen said, which is a broad-based reason. Now, I've studied this professionally, and I can tell you that overwhelmingly what I've seen through my private sector studies is that it comes to exactly what Senator Pappas said earlier, which is the paycheck-to-paycheck scenario where people don't feel like they have $5, $50 to contribute. So my concern is right up in Section 1 where it lays out that this is specifically for the establishment of a state-administered retirement savings plan.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Pappas.
Perhaps that opening paragraph isn't as artful, but Senator Pratt, I did want to point out that that is our intention. On 1.19.120, the question is barriers to savings and reasons individuals and employers may not be participating in existing private sector retirement plans. On 1.31 and 1.32, advantages and disadvantages of a potential state-administered plan compared to private sector and federal government retirement savings options. And on 2.1 and 2.2, alternative ways and costs for the state to encourage similar outcomes to a state-administered plan. So we are looking at three things. We're looking at what's happening in the private sector and why that, you know, has not been effective and how it could be more effective. What's going on with the federal government, and is that going to work? Is that going to be enough? And what would a state-administered plan look like? So we really are looking at three things.
Senator
Certainly,
Brown.
Senator Pratt, if you wanted me to make that more clear, I'm happy to look at that.
Thank you.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if there's anyone who wants
anybody
to testify.
Else? I was just
Our testifiers
get to
couldn't
that,
make it, but we do have a letter in the packet from AARP. They're one of the major proponents of this bill.
Okay, now I think we're ready for anybody in the audience wishes to be heard on this bill this time. Okay, I think you're ready. I'm glad, as a chair of the committee, I'm glad it's not the full-scale bill today. I'm not real excited about a study, but I will probably vote for the study only because the way it goes to a study instead of a full-fledged mandate to begin with. So.
Then, if no one wants to testify, Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 2078 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance.
On that motion.
All those in favor.
All those in favor. I know what to do. I've been to a couple of state fairs, but Senator Kosalka got my attention a little while ago. So all those in favor, so goodbye by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Our motion does prevail.
Thank you.
Thanks for the education. Right?
Yes, I'm helping.
Senator Scheer and Senate File 2027, e-cigarettes regulations. Welcome to the committee, Senator, and you may proceed. I see there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 or so testifiers, so we'll get started. Senator Sharon, welcome.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. I would like to walk through the bill at first and then make a few comments and introduce testifiers, if that's the way you would like to approach
sure.
it.
You're leading the way here. Whatever you want to do.
All right. So the first thing that we'll do is take Senate File 2027 and to make certain that everyone understands what the contents of the bill are, we'll walk through it to indicate what's in this act. First of all, of course, there's the introduction, which talks about the fact that it's relating to health, regulating e-cigarettes, and Minnesota, and amending the Minnesota statutes that regulate the use of tobacco in public places and the sale of tobacco products. In Section 1, there's the definition, as you can see, of smoking is changed to include a heated cigar or a heated tobacco product, an electronic delivery device, and that's defined. And it includes holding a lighted or a heated cigar, and it includes heated tobacco or electronic delivery device. So, in essence, the purpose of this section that has those new languages in it is to amend the definition of smoking in the existing Clean Indoor Air Act to include e-cigarette use. Therefore, if this legislation is enacted, wherever smoking is prohibited, e-cigarette use would also be prohibited. Adding e-cigarettes in this section to the Clean Indoor Air Act will protect the strong standard of clean indoor air that Minnesotans have come to expect and support. Moving on then to Section 2. The purpose of this section is to prohibit the use of e-cigarettes in public schools by extending the prohibition on tobacco products to include e-cigarettes. So the language like online, I think it's line 1.13144, et cetera, tobacco products prohibited in public schools. And it says no person at any time shall smoke, chew, or otherwise ingest tobacco. And in this section, it goes on to further articulate that it would be illegal in schools to inhale or exhale vapor from electronic delivery service device. Section 3, moving on to Section 3, the purpose of this section is to authorize local units of government to require retailers, those who sell the product, to obtain a tobacco retailer license in order to sell electronic cigarettes or delivery devices or e-cigarettes, and nicotine and Lobelia delivery products for other kinds of e-cigarettes. These are all terms to use for different kind of products that create a capsule in which you include product that are used in an electronic method. The products that are FDA approved for tobacco use, cessation products, or other medical purposes are excluded from this requirement, the retailers to obtain a tobacco retailer license. These other products that we're talking about are products that have been approved and have been tested and regulated by the FDA. Section 3, authorizes local units of government to regulate the retail sales of e-cigarettes and nicotine and other Lobelia delivery products and applies them to existing regulatory provisions. There's a license fee to recover the enforcement costs, similar to what we do with smoking cigarettes. There are administrative penalties in this section for licensees and individual salespersons who sell, for example, to minors. There are penalties in this section for minors. There's language related to compliance checks. And so this section primarily deals with the authorization of local governments to establish that retailer license and to implement law related to asserting the regulation of that license. Section 4. The purpose of Section 4, as you can see, is to prohibit self-service. This is another way of trying to control access to this product, particularly by minors, of e-cigarettes and nicotine or Lobelia delivery products. This is repeated throughout the bill to rename them all the time. except in adult-only retail establishments where there are age limits already. Retailers would be required to keep these products behind the counter in this section with all other tobacco products. E-cigarettes could not be sold on open shelving or in an open counter next to candy or gum, and it could not be sold in vending machines. So Section 4 addresses those components. Section 5, the purpose of this section is to describe the effect on local ordinances. It's to prohibit preemption of local ordinances that regulate, in addition to the sales of tobacco, the sale of all of these e-cigarette-type products. This provision in Section 5 ensures that local ordinances, as is true with the Clean Indoor Air Act, can become more restrictive in state law. So there cannot be less restrictive, meaning they cannot undo any of the elements of this bill, but they may want to increase their restrictions. For example, if you remember during the discussion of the Tobacco Clean Indoor Air Act, there was discussion about whether or not this tobacco could be used in parks or could be used in other places. So when we're talking about not taking away local control, if they want to extend beyond what is included in this bill. And this bill is narrowly focused to prohibit its use in public places in the same way as tobacco. It just aligns the language with the language that we have for tobacco utilization for smoking. The purpose of this section 6 is to impose criminal penalties for selling or furnishing tobacco-related devices to minors. That's it would apply the same penalties already in place for selling tobacco to minors. So again, is simply taking all of the language under the tobacco prohibitions and applying them to e-cigarettes as it relates to minors. Criminal penalties would also be imposed on minors who possess or purchase or attempt to purchase e-cigarettes. An exception would apply to minors who are assisting with compliance checks. Sometimes for sting operations, youth are utilized in those sting operations. So that just is clearly articulating that they're protected from the application of this section. And in this section, the definition of tobacco is amended to be consistent with the definition of tobacco products in the tobacco law. The definition of tobacco-related devices would be amended to include devices and components of devices. So I'm going to say that again. It's devices and components of devices sold or marketed separately. Some of these products are sold in pieces. So it's the sale of all of the components that are designated or intended to enable smoking, vaping, or chewing of tobacco products. And this section also has a definition of electronic delivery device, which would be added to cover e-cigarettes and their component parts, whether or not the components are marketed or sold separately. Products claiming to contain no nicotine or claiming to contain nicotine derived from a source other than tobacco would be regulated in the same manner as tobacco products in this section. A product that is approved by the FDA for sale as a tobacco cessation product or for another medical purposes are marketed and sold for that purpose would be accepted. So there are certain products for smoking cessation that are already FDA approved. They've been studied. They've been found to be efficacious. That we know that the claims for the product are demonstrated in research as valid. And we already know the risks. We also know the contents and have control over the contents of those products. So for those that are already FDA approved, we are exempting from this section. And that, let me see if there's something else I should be mentioning.
I think you got us through all of the seven.
Yeah. To Section 7, it's about prohibiting sale to minors.
I think you got through the whole bill so far. Okay.
Okay, so thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, now that we've walked through the bill, to talk with you about this bill, why it's important, why you would be interested in supporting this legislation, which I'm hoping that you will do. So we have a number of testifiers who would like to talk to you about the importance of your support for this bill. And so I think that we can begin with some of those testifiers at this time.
If that's fine, opinion. If you wish to call them up in the order you'd like.
Okay, great.
I've got a list here, but I'll let you decide who.
I think we should begin with our commissioner, Ed Ellinger, who is the commissioner of health in the state of Minnesota. So we'll begin with Commissioner Ellinger.
Welcome, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to talk about be in support of Senate File 2027. This is the 50th anniversary of the 1964 Surgeon General's report that identified tobacco as a major public health issue in our country. For many years prior to that, the data were coming out pretty strongly that tobacco use was harmful to the health of Americans. But a lot of those reports were stifled because of the claim that there wasn't enough evidence. Well, when they finally had enough evidence in 1964 to put out the Surgeon General's report, we were already behind the times in that. By then, tobacco had been glamorized. Over 50% of the people smoked. Tobacco was an integral part of our culture, and it was a big business. And so we've been, ever since that time, trying to catch up with tobacco as our number one public health problem. We've made a lot of progress, but we've been constantly challenged in the public health community all along the way. The tobacco industry has come up with new products all along the way and have changed, doing flavors and new marketing products to try to keep tobacco as a major part of our society. Smokeless tobacco, particularly since 2007, when Clean Indoor Air Act laws were coming throughout the country, the tobacco industry responded with other alternative approaches like smokeless tobacco, and in 2007, the development of e-cigarettes. It's one way to get around the smoke-free indoor air acts. And so what we're seeing now is history repeating itself in terms of the request to, you know, we need more data. Well, we have a lot of data coming out showing the harms of e-cigarettes. So I think it is time to act on e-cigarettes. E-cigarettes are not currently regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. They're an untested product and have not been proven to be a safe alternative to smoking. There are over 300 manufacturers and no regulations, so there's no consistency in quality from one e-cigarette to the next. And they're made not all in the United States. Many are made in other countries. The labeling in some cases for e-cigarettes has been completely inaccurate, including claims that they're nicotine-free when actually nicotine has been found. Quality control processes producing e-cigarettes are very limited, so there's no guarantee in consistency in how much nicotine each e-cigarette has. And vaping solutions, what these are called, the e-cig juice, is often mixed in the stores right where they are sold. So we've had problems with compounding pharmacies, which you've heard about in the past. Well, now we have compounding vaping centers. And e-cigarettes are often being used now to vape other things other than nicotine. So the potential health risks of e-cigarettes remain undetermined. However, we know that there are carcinogens and toxins found in e-cigarettes, and several of those compounds are also similar to those that are found in regular cigarettes, conventional cigarettes. And the vapor emitted from e-cigarettes has not been proven to be safe. A study evaluating the vapor from 12 brands of e-cigarette found potentially toxic and carcinogenic substance. Certainly at lower levels than in regular cigarettes, but available in the air nonetheless. Without proper regulation by the Food and Drug Administration, it's really difficult to know how much nicotine or other potentially harmful cancer-causing chemicals people are exposed to during the use of this. One of my major concerns as a pediatrician is what's happening with our children. Nicotine in high doses can be toxic to children and even fatal when ingested or absorbed through the skin. We're finding in the last couple of years an increasing number of calls to the Poison Control Center, which have seen toxic exposures to nicotine from 5 in 2011 to 74 in 2013. So this is a concern. Most of these are young children who are ingesting the e-cig juice, which do not come in safety containers, no safety controls. And since they often come in flavors like gummy bear and chocolate, they are very appealing. And as I said, e-cigarettes are being marketed to young people, which is a major concern. Flavors that really are focused on adolescents and young folks, fruit punch, chocolate. Research shows that those flavors are appealing to children and adolescents. Celebrities are also supporting these kinds of things, again, focused on young adults. And young people are really very vulnerable to social and environmental influences. And e-cigarettes may renormalize smoking, making it look like an acceptable behavior that's appealing to youth. And the data are showing that this is working because the use of e-cigarettes by high school and middle school students has more than doubled between 2011 and 2012. And e-cigarettes may serve as a gateway for young people or for non-smokers to try conventional cigarettes. An article earlier this month from the Journal of the American Medical Association concluded that e-cigarettes by adolescents was associated with the person being more likely to be a smoker, more likely to begin smoking, less likely to quit smoking from conventional cigarettes, and has found that e-cigarettes do not discourage and may actually encourage conventional cigarette use among U.S. adolescents. And one of the things that we certainly don't want our young folks addicted to nicotine. It is a habit that is increasingly difficult to get away from, so we don't want children to be addicted, and the marketing for e-cigarettes is really towards children. Related to e-cigarettes and cessation, they are not marketed as a cessation device. They've not gone through any of the clinical trials, and in fact, their statements are they are not to be used for cessation. They're not approved as an FDA cessation device. E-cigarettes actually may undermine the efforts to encourage people to quit tobacco use because of dual use. They use the e-cigarettes when people are in a place where they can't smoke and then use regular tobacco in places where they can use tobacco. They are being offered as a safe alternative to tobacco so that people are starting to think this is a safer way to go. So they really may undermine our efforts to really get people to get off of tobacco use. So given all of that, I think the state has a responsibility to act in this. This is a threat to the health of the public, particularly to the health of our adolescents and young adults. There's no body of evidence to show that the vapor emitted from e-cigarettes is safe to inhale. E-cigarettes use in smoke-free areas undermine the significance of our Freedom to Breathe Act. E-cigarettes may complicate enforcement of smoke-free laws, as it may be difficult to distinguish them from conventional cigarettes. E-cigarette use in smoke-free areas may make clean indoor air laws less effective at keeping children and families free from exposure to nicotine and other potentially harmful cancer-causing chemicals. And e-cigarettes are exposing an increasing number of teens to nicotine, an addictive substance. And e-cigarettes may undermine efforts to encourage people to quit tobacco use through the dual use efforts to keep smoking e-cigarettes when they can and tobacco when they can. So with all of this, I do believe that it would be in the health of the public of Minnesota, passing this Senate file 2027 would be a good move. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Goodwin.
Are we going to wait for questions or can I ask?
Oh, yeah, you can go ahead right now while it's on your
all
mind.
All right. Thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't get your last name.
Ellinger.
This is Commissioner Ellinger from the Department of Health.
Ellinger, you keep saying potentially harmful. What does that mean?
We know that,
Commissioner,
Madam Chair, Senator, we do know that the chemicals that are in e-cigarettes have been shown to be harmful. They're cancer-causing cigarettes. Are cancer-causing materials. The extent of the studies that have been done on e-cigarettes is a growing field, and the more we know about it, we know that they can cause cancer, they can cause addiction, they can cause exposure to heavy metals. So we know that those have been shown in other studies to be harmful. The use of people using e-cigarettes, those studies have not been totally done at this point in time.
Well, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, what studies can you cite? I haven't found any. I've been looking for studies on this issue that say that that it's been proven that it's harmful or that some of the things that you've talked about are true, but I haven't found those studies. Do you have anything you can cite for me, any studies?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we know that there have been studies done by the Centers for Disease Control on the chemicals that are emitted from e-cigarettes. We know there was just the JAMA study that was recently published that shows the addictive nature and how it is used by adolescents. And there's a growing various. The University of Minnesota has had some of their researchers from their tobacco control program evaluate the effectiveness of or ineffectiveness of the cessation efforts. Other universities throughout the country are looking at this. We're also asking the Food and Drug Administration, which has not been as actively engaged as we would like in this, to also do some more studies because this is, since the use is going up dramatically and relatively quickly, we need to do more studies to really get ahead of the curve on this.
Well, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, don't you think that maybe we should do those studies before we go this far? I'm just saying, you know, I'm a little concerned about banning anything that we don't have real proof that it is harmful. And you said that there's no evidence that it's safe. But on the other hand of that, on the other side of that, then there's probably no good evidence that it's harmful yet either. And I certainly would support studying this issue. And I certainly do support keeping away from minors in the meantime. But I'm just wondering... I wish we would have had some of that research produced for us. I think it's important to make sure that we don't ban things that we're not sure of yet.
Senator. Mr. Chair, Senator, as I mentioned, prior to 1964, we had a lot of evidence showing the harmful effects of tobacco use. And we waited until we had unequivocal evidence. And that really put us behind the curve. And we had a lot of people already addicted. We do know there are lots of studies that do show that nicotine is addictive. And we do know that it is being distributed in fairly high quantities through e-cigarettes. We know that they're being marketed to adolescents. We know that adolescents are becoming addicted to nicotine. They're very sensitive to nicotine. We know that the chemicals that are in e-cigarettes are being emitted in various concentrations. So we know a lot of information, and all of that information is leading us to a fact that if these continue to be increasingly popular, we are going to have more children addicted. We are going to have young adults and older adults not quit when they would really be more likely to quit without e-cigarettes, that it is a harmful product for our society. So I think it is time to act now before we cross every T and dot every I and have unequivocal evidence. We have enough evidence now to show that we're going in the wrong direction with e-cigarettes.
Thank you.
Senator Letts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow on what Commissioner Ellinger had to say, there are a lot of products that we don't allow onto the market until after they've been proven safe. Every medicine in our medicine cabinets at home, every medicine that doctors prescribe, they don't come on the market. Every medical product, even the knees that go into Senator Tomasoni's new knees, last year they were approved by the Food and Drug Administration before they were allowed to be sold and marketed. They go through years and years of testing on animals and human, extensive clinical studies and everything else. So there's a lot of stuff that gets tested first, and we don't allow many of our manufacturing facilities to emit certain things unless they've gone through an extensive permitting process as well. You know, if this were just something that if you ingested it yourself, you were the only one that you were taking your risk, well, that'd be one thing. But like regular cigarettes here, if it were only happening outdoors, it'd be, it wouldn't be as risky. But like regular cigarettes, if you smoke or vape an electronic cigarette, you're putting everyone around you at risk indoors. So every employee at every restaurant or everyone who's sitting inside here at the Capitol, everyone sitting in the lobby at the courthouse, where I actually had a client who was sitting there vaping in the lobby waiting for his court appearance. Everyone around him is being put at risk, not just himself. And so what this bill proposes to do is, you know, fine, you take your own risk if you want. That's up to you. FDA hasn't gotten involved at that level yet. But at least don't put everyone else who happens to be on the same bus or the same in the same room or at the same social event in a public environment. Don't put everyone else at risk, too. And that's all this bill does.
Any further questions at this time? It's your next witness, Senator Sheriff.
Yes, I'd like to introduce Molly Mullinan. She's the Director of Public Affairs at Clearway, Minnesota. And as she approaches, I would want to draw your attention to some materials that were distributed. And I just want you to know that in the materials is a are going to be referred to by Molly, but I wanted to draw your attention to the e-cigarettes polls that have been done both by individuals on keeping indoor air free of vaping, as well as commercial establishments wanting to have protections at the state level. Also, the League of Minnesota Cities has a letter that identifies the interest they have in a statewide prohibition. And there's, I think, an article in here that just came out today over the weekend from the New York Times that's talking about in the nation, the discovery about the poisoning that's occurring because of uncontrolled and unregulated nicotine. So I just would draw your attention that that's materials in your packet.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of 2027 today. My name is Molly Moylanen. I'm with Clearway, Minnesota. Our organization wants to reduce tobacco's harm in Minnesota. Today, I'm appearing on the behalf of a large coalition of organizations that support this legislation, including the American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, the American Lung Association, the Association for Non-Smokers Minnesota, Blue Cross and Blue Shield, the Minnesota Medical Association, among many others. All these organizations helped in the fight to pass the Freedom to Breathe Act back in 2007. It can be hard to remember the controversy that once surrounded the law and how it took years to pass. The reason it's hard to remember is because today, Freedom to Breathe is one of the most popular policies our state has ever seen. Every survey since 2007 has found it growing more popular, with the most recent poll showing 87% approval. These days, what other state policy gets approval ratings like that? It's a fact that the health in Minnesota is benefiting from Freedom to Breathe. Studies have found decreases in carcinogens, heart attacks, and secondhand smoke exposure directly attributable to that law. We also know that the public wants e-cigarettes added to the law. Just this January, Blue Cross conducted a poll on this issue. Now, some people have asked for the exact questions we used in the poll, so I'm going to quote directly. Let me ask you about some specific ways that people have suggested to regulate e-cigarettes. For each, please tell me whether you would be strongly supportive, somewhat opposed, or strongly opposed to this form of regulation. Prohibit their use in workplaces and other public places where regular cigarettes are currently banned. 79% indicated they supported prohibiting them. Require e-cigarettes to be sold behind the counters. 87% indicated support. Prohibit the sale of e-cigarettes to anyone under 18. 98% indicated support. These are huge numbers. The questions and additional info about the poll methodology is in your packets. Now, several communities, including Duluth and Mankato, have already taken action to restrict e-cigarettes. And city officials have testified in previous committee hearings that these policies are not hurting businesses. Other local governments say they want direction from the state because they don't have the resources to fully examine this issue themselves. Included in your packet, as Senator Sarin mentioned, is a statement from the League of Minnesota Cities expressing support for a statewide approach. The city of Minneapolis has endorsed a statewide policy, and a poll of bar and restaurants in that city found that 58% support legislation that would prohibit e-cigarette use indoors. The Freedom to Breathe Act was meant to protect everyone's right to breathe clean air indoors. Hospitality workers, the elderly, people with compromised immune systems. I'm the mother of a six-month-old myself, and when someone lights up an e-cigarette in a restaurant and starts blowing clouds of vapor, I get nervous because I just don't know what she's breathing in. When the law was written, e-cigarettes were only just beginning to appear in Minnesota. Its authors at the time couldn't have imagined when they would be used to get around the law. The legislature now can easily correct this loophole and show it understands the importance of the clean air the law protects. The public support demonstrates that the proposal before you makes sense. E-cigarette use is on the rise, and people do not want them to encroach on the clean indoor air they've enjoyed in public places for 7 years now. We urge you to support this legislation.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
Troublemaker has another question. The Freedom to Breathe Act that was passed a few years ago had one exclusion in it, and that was for people that smoke on stage during a play. And so I had complaints from some constituents who work in the production crews of plays and in the metro area and in greater Minnesota. And in some plays, there's an excessive amount of smoking, and we're all cigarettes. And I asked your organization to support me in a bill to prevent that, and you wouldn't. So I'm wondering why you would allow that exclusion but be so disturbed about this particular issue. I have here a study from the National Center of U.S. National Library of Medicine, National Institutes of Health. That conclusion says that the study indicates no apparent risk to human health from e-cigarette emissions based on the compounds analyzed. So there is some studies to the contrary of what our studies were cited earlier. I haven't seen the studies yet that said that there is, but I will look those up. But I want to know the answer to why your organization didn't support not allowing live smoking of real cigarettes in plays.
Senator Metza, may I respond to the second part of the comment, and then I would leave it to Ms. Moynihan to respond to the theatrical exemption. One of the issues that our commissioner mentioned is, and this is really true, that the capacity to create the cartridge and the contents of the cartridge have enormous variation. So we aren't really able to know what it is that people have in their cartridges and what they're emitting. So when you have a study that says, based on the ingredients, they're talking about a particular set of ingredients, we don't know what they were, and we don't know that those are the same ingredients that exist in anybody else's, we don't know what the percent of nicotine was, what the metal levels were in that study. And maybe if they were harmless, they can be the standard in the future. But right now, that's research could be helpful in that regard. But it's not helpful in terms of assuring the public that every capsule that's created and utilized is without harm or risk to the public. The fact that some of these already are showing toxic levels and reports into the departments of health for poisoning indicate that capsule might be safe, but many are not. I would ask you to ask the second part of Senator Goodwin's question.
Second part.
Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin, Clearway, Minnesota, and as I communicated to you in the past, we absolutely support reducing secondhand smoke exposure wherever it is found. At the time when you introduced your bill, we were concerned that we did not have enough support on the committee that would have to prevent amendments that would go on the bill that would roll back the Freedom to Breathe Act. So we were concerned that your bill might open up this bill that we worked so hard for and made so much progress in. But to clarify our position, we absolutely support reducing secondhand smoke, and we support reducing it in all places, including theaters.
Okay.
We have... if you'd like to continue with our testifiers.
That's correct.
Kevin Lewis, Executive Director of Greater Minneapolis Building Owner and Managers Association.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Kevin Lewis. I'm the Executive Director of BOMA, the Building Owners and Managers Association of Greater Minneapolis. We represent about 60 million square feet of commercial office space in the metropolitan area. We have about 640 members. When the subject of e-cigarettes first came about, BOMA International, realizing that this was a trend nationally as well, put together a committee and came together with a position. So BOMA International's position is as follows. BOMA International supports the rights of building owners to establish appropriate policies and procedures subject to prevailing federal, state, and local laws, until such time as there is generally accepted evidence as determined by a recognized federal, state, or local agency regarding the public health effects of electronic cigarettes. E-cigarettes should be treated similarly to conventional cigarettes and other tobacco products. With the advent of the e-cigarettes, this presents to us a severe challenge associated with the managing, enforcing of potential conflicts arising from the use of electronic nicotine delivery system, vaping, or e-cigarettes in indoor environments. At BOMA Greater Minneapolis, we had our executive committee, our government affairs, and our board of directors analyze and study and seek quite a bit of information on this subject matter. To be clear, our organization is not looking to restrict the sale of nor prohibit it, but merely to have it fall under the same guidelines as the Clean Indoor Act. The issue is for our tenants' safety and for their environment that the onus is really on the property managers, their security companies that they retain, and overall building management to monitor, police, assess, and make a decision on what is or is not being emitted to thousands of people on a daily basis. BOMA Greater Minneapolis strongly supports the proposed legislation of treating such devices under the guidelines set forth in the current Clean Indoor Act laws that would prohibit such use and utilization within the same confines of the current prohibited spaces. Truly, our objective is to continue to provide a clean, safe environment to the tenants that occupy our buildings. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Lewis? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lewis, why wouldn't we allow building owners to manage this? Why a statewide statute when there's no conclusive evidence that it's harmful, and that your building manager should be able to set up, you know, just like we're talking about regulations on schools and regulations to sale on minors, both of which I think are good provisions of this bill, why not allow them to manage it?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lewis.
Senator, on an international level, again, I stipulated earlier that this conversation has been going on a national level. The buildings, when it was first brought to our attention, did approach and ask for some guidance on BOMA's part. And at the time, we asked them to enforce it as such, to their own ability to have them enforce it. And so they did follow what has been put forth in the Clean Indoor Act. They can, as a private building, but to the thousands of individuals that come through their building each and every day, the idea that they would need to stop, investigate, and ask each individual what is being emitted, whether it's safe or unsafe. This falling under this particular Clean Indoor Act would allow them the background so that they could enforce this particular act.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But to that point, Mr. Lewis, it seems to me that a building could say, we don't want to go through that hassle. Another building, particularly, say, of office buildings where the occupants maybe have an easier time doing that enforcement would have a different perspective on that. And so it seems like what you're suggesting is we take the most public and most example, right, of enforcement and say, therefore, we have to apply it to every situation.
Mr. Chair, Senator,
Lewis.
We did query tenants of our buildings. The employees that may use e-cigarettes and so on, many of them are employees of our tenants. We asked quite a few of the tenants of our building, and they almost universally suggested that we follow this the same Clean Indoor Act and not allow a variance. I personally asked a lot of e-cigarette users in buildings in proximity to ask the question, and the vast majority didn't really have an issue with standing on the sidewalk with the rest of the tobacco-smoking individuals. So from that perspective, the tenants who, again, occupy our buildings, they're our clients. My members are the landlords, but the tenants are really the clients in this situation. They've been queried, they've been asked, and their preference, as ours is too, is to have it fall under the Clean Indoor Act so that they can have a situation in their office that they can report it to the building if someone is not following the Clean Indoor Act.
Any further questions of Mr. Lewis? Kate.
Thank you
very much.
That concludes our three testifiers. I just would conclude this first set of testimony to orient you to what's in the bill. Again, this is not about prohibiting or restricting adults from the purchase of electronic cigarettes or from utilizing them. This is not a prohibition of e-cigarettes. It is a boundary. It is a limit that asks the legislature to apply the same law about indoor spaces to electronic cigarettes as to tobacco products. Because the risks that's inherent in it is unclear, it is not proven to be safe. And in other products of similar nature, nicotine is a chemical. It's a mood-altering chemical. We require substantive research before it can be sold. This bill does not do that. This bill says you can sell it. We're simply saying that we don't want the public to have to take the risk with the adult users of this product. And the public is asking you to not ask them to take the risk with the utilizers of e-cigarettes. They can use it as much. They can buy it if they want to. When they go into indoor places, they can use the FDA-approved products that allow them to continue to have their nicotine doses as they need them. But we ask the users of e-cigarettes to respect that the public would like the clean air, indoor air to be clean so that they do not have to take a risk along with the adult user of the substance. And certainly we want to, you know, I often hear us talking about wanting to protect the youth, and we do. This bill does that by prohibiting the sale to minors. But it's difficult for me to understand why we would not want to protect everybody, youth and adult. So we have this inherent sense that we should do something to protect the youth because we're worried about it. So if we're worried about it for the youth, we should be worried about it for our adults. And we also, in public places, if you support the protection of youth in Subdivision 2, then Subdivision A equivalently protects youth from not only exposure to the vapor, but exposure to the modeling that occurs when they watch others use the product.
Okay, Senator Letts.
To that point, Senator Metz, you may have been around. I don't remember when
1937. 1927. No, I'm just
trying to, years ago before, smoking was allowed in the Capitol. And right now, in fact, under current law, this room could be filled with people smoking or vaping e-cigarettes. And, this, every one of us sitting here at the table would be inhaling right along with anyone sitting in the other chairs out here in a smoke-filled room or a vapor-filled room, and we'd have no idea what is in it. And we wouldn't know. I mean, if there were kids sitting here in the audience, we want to protect the youth. I mean, they'd be breathing in the same vapor that we adults would be breathing. If we stepped out into the rotunda, where every day we got busloads of kids coming through for their school tours, they'd be breathing all the same vapors in the Capitol as we would be breathing if it were allowed indoor air. So if for no other reason than to protect the health of the youth, we have to match the e-cigs up with the regular tobacco products on the indoor air end.
Okay. We've got Tom Bryant, Minnesota Wholesale Marketers Association.
Mr. Chairman, is there a page to hand out?
Yes, there is. Welcome, Mr. Bryant, to Minnesota Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Proceed. What is this?
That's an example of an electronic cigarette. I'm going to demonstrate that, not going to inhale it, but show you the parts and how it works, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I guess you can do that. It'll allow props in the committee room, but not anywhere else. But go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Bryant, and I'm the executive director of two associations. One is the Minnesota Wholesale Marketers Association. That's a group of tobacco wholesalers here in the state. And the other is the National Association of Tobacco Outlets, a trade association of retail stores across the country. We do not oppose the sections of Senate File 2027 that would prohibit the sale of e-cigarettes to minors, require licensing, restrict displays, prohibit them in schools. As tobacco wholesalers and retailers, we already comply with all those same kind of regulations. And so we would certainly support those. However, we want to share with you our concerns on Section 1 of Senate File 2027. That would change the definition of smoking and not allow e-cigarettes to be used in public places. But before I talk about those concerns, I want to explain to you how e-cigarettes work so you have a good understanding and knowledge of that. There are two kinds of e-cigarettes. One is called an open system, and one is called a closed system. An open system allows you to take a small bottle of e-liquid with nicotine in it and keep filling your reservoir on your e-cigarette. It's called an open system because you can open the reservoir, pour in the liquid, close the reservoir, and then use it. The other is a closed system, and that's what I passed out to you as a diagram of a closed system e-cigarette. This is a closed system e-cigarette. It comes in two parts. 90% of the e-cigarettes sold in convenience stores are closed system. They are this. This is the main body. On the end is an LED light that lights up when you inhale the e-cigarette. There's a microchip right behind the light that controls the functions of the e-cigarette. There's a lithium-ion battery right behind the microchip that powers the e-cigarette. There's a sensor at this opening that senses when someone's taking a breath of the e-cigarette in. This is the second part. This is called the cartomizer. This contains a very thin cylinder heating element that heats the liquid nicotine, turns it into a vapor. Around the heating element is a cylinder of cotton. That is what is infused with the nicotine liquid. So it works, you screw these two together, and these are all sealed. If you shake this, nothing comes out. If you screw this together and inhale on this end, the sensor detects the breath coming in. The microchip lights the LED light, then it triggers the heating element to heat the nicotine liquid that's in the cotton. And a small amount of the vapor with nicotine is expelled and inhaled by the user from this end. Now, what's in that liquid nicotine and the vapor? I've heard various testimony. I passed out two examples, and I'm going to go through the ingredients that are listed on the back of that e-cigarette example. First, propylene glycol is in there. That's been found by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to be safe. It's also found in food products as a preservative and in pharmaceutical products like asthma inhalers. And that's because propylene glycol is a liquid that can vaporize and then can carry drugs like asthma medicine or liquid nicotine when it's heated to the person that's inhaling it. Glycerin is next listed. That is a liquid sugar alcohol compound that's also widely used in pharmaceutical products and drugs. Next, nicotine is in the liquid that's infused in the cotton. However, it's about one-fifth the concentration that you'd get from smoking a traditional cigarette in terms of burning a cigarette. The FDA has determined that neither propylene glycol, it's not a carcinogen, nor is nicotine a carcinogen. It doesn't cause cancer. It's addictive, but doesn't cause cancer. Then there's purified water in the liquid nicotine. There's menthol, menthol furfural, which is part of menthol, it's a flavoring, and a vanilla extract. Those are the ingredients that are listed on that particular kind of e-cigarette. Now, why is all of that important to you from a Commerce Committee standpoint? For this reason. Minnesota tobacco wholesalers and retailers have always paid a high excise tax rate on electronic cigarettes. In fact, Minnesota is the only state so far that charges a tax on e-cigarettes. It's currently 95% of the wholesale price. This single disposable e-cigarette costs at retail about $16 to $17, about twice the cost of a pack of traditional cigarettes. The high tax rate in Minnesota means that wholesalers and retailers do not sell a significant number of e-cigarettes in this state. They never have, because it's always been taxed. Getting back to Senate File 2027, as I stated, Section 1 would ban the use of e-cigarettes in public places. This means that business owners would not be able to decide for themselves whether to allow adults to use e-cigarettes in their establishments or not. The problem with enacting Section 1 is this. It would give Minnesotans the impression that using an electronic cigarette is in effect the same as smoking a traditional cigarette, because they'd both be banned. A recent survey that was published last month concluded that two-thirds of Americans would not be bothered by someone using an e-cigarette in close proximity to them, compared to the vastly different opinion you'll get when you ask Americans, would they be bothered by someone smoking a traditional cigarette that has tobacco smoke? E-cigarettes may deliver nicotine like a traditional cigarette, but that is where the difference, the similarity ends. It is the burning of tobacco in a traditional cigarette that causes the toxins that cause health issues. There is no tobacco in an e-cigarette. There's no burning. It's only heating. So e-cigarettes offer consumers a high level of harm reduction and really a positive alternative to traditional cigarettes. There's been questions about studies. This study was issued last August of 2003, and I have a copy I provided to the committee. It's from the Drexel University School of Public Health. They analyzed e-cigarettes and the vapor constituents. I'll read their conclusion to you. An analysis of current state of knowledge about electronic cigarettes indicates that there is no evidence that vaping produces inhalable exposures to contaminants that would warrant health concerns by the standards that are used to ensure safety in workplaces. Exposures of bystanders are likely to be orders of magnitude less and thus pose no apparent concern. In fact, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has now drafted a set of proposed regulations. They are currently being reviewed by the White House Office of Management and Budget. The FDA recognizes that these products are not traditional cigarettes. They're very different. But they want to get the science right before they regulate them. When the Clean Indoor Air Act was adopted, you had a body of scientific studies on which to base your decision to enact those restrictions on smoking cigarettes. You need more time to let the FDA do its work. They just created 14 centers of tobacco research to do this kind of research, and they just funded those last September. You need time to let that all happen. Now, these principles being followed by the FDA hold true for you as lawmakers as well. And if there's one thing you take away from this hearing, I want it to be this. It's not to enact a ban on using e-cigarettes that either, one, causes adults to erroneously believe that they are the same as cigarettes. They are not. Or, two, that acts as a disincentive for adults to transition to using e-cigarettes. These are substantially less harmful. If people are looking for an alternative, this is one that you should allow them to use. In conclusion, the 95% tax on e-cigarettes is already a negative impact on commerce for wholesalers and retailers. And I ask that you pause before adding in another layer of regulation that would be a further disincentive for adults to use this kind of product. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Jensen first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bryant, if I am understanding what you're saying, is that you're okay with the rest of the sections in the bill, but Section 1 is the one that you're having an issue with?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Senator Jensen? Yes.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Jensen.
So where it says that we don't want it in public schools and we don't want to sell it to children and we don't want to do any of those things, why are you supportive of that?
Mr. Chairman? Senator Jensen, because we already comply with all of those kind of restrictions on regular tobacco products, cigarettes, et cetera, we don't sell to minors, we have displays restricted, et cetera, they're already there. We as retailers and wholesalers comply with that already.
Senator Jensen, did you follow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why? Why do you comply?
I'm sorry, Senator?
Why do you comply if what you're saying is that there's no... that you have conclusive evidence everything is safe, why do you currently comply with those things for e-cigarettes?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jensen, we're responsible business people. We're not in the business of selling e-cigarettes to minors or to allow them to be used around minors. I think most Minnesotans are very respectful. I have not heard testimony that there's been an outcry of complaints at restaurants or bars or taverns or bowling alleys about people vaping. But that's because we're respectful. And people know that if people would be concerned about using an e-cigarette, they probably wouldn't do it in close proximity to somebody else. What we're saying, it's a different kind of product that is much less harmful and allow the FDA and its researchers to conduct the studies needed in order to develop the science that will support good, sound public policy. And that's where we come from.
Senator Kosoka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one comment before my question. The Minneapolis Health Department survey here of small business or bars, restaurants, et cetera, it said 62% indicated they had not encountered use in their establishment. It tells me that it's not perceived the same or not experienced the same if they just didn't even know it was happening. But my question is to Senator Sharon, if we remove Section 1, exactly how would that impact the bill? So I know for sure that private establishments would then now be able to choose whether or not they wanted to ban e-cigarettes or not. But how would that impact public buildings?
Senator Sharon, if you wish to.
If you eliminate the first section, I guess it is, the first section of the bill, it would allow the use of electronic cigarettes without restriction to adults.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, because I know in past over some of our tobacco issues, we had debates about public versus private, so that would be a complete removal. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Okay. I think the school issue is not in Section 1, is it? It's not in Section 1. Section 2. So, yes, Section 1 is.
Mr. Chairman?
I see where Senator Letts.
Thank you. Mr. Bryant, when someone purchases an e-cigarette, how many times can they use it before it is to be disposed of?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, a disposable like I passed out there or the diagram you have is usually equivalent to about 2 packs of cigarettes, give or take. I'm not that familiar with the open systems where you use liquid and pour it in. There might be another person that can testify to that, but it's about 2 packs of cigarettes, Senator.
Okay. It says on there 400 quality puffs.
That's about 2 packs of cigarettes, Mr. Chair.
And it also going on to say kissable breath. And I didn't read all of it. But.
And there's nothing in this legislation that takes that away.
It's not your meeting.
It depends on which flavor you're vaping, Mr. Chairman. If I may have another question, Mr. Chairman.
Canadian Club or chocolate or whatever you choose.
Yeah. Or bubble gum or gummy bear, I guess that's. Mr. Chairman, if I may follow up. Mr. Bryant, you gave us a list of ingredients here. Now, my understanding is there have been a number of attempts to secure comprehensive lists of ingredients from the manufacturers, but unsuccessfully. Can you tell me what else, in addition to the very short list of ingredients you specified, is contained in these fluid packs and what else is carried by the propylene glycol as it's vaporized and into the lungs?
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, I'm only familiar with the closed system, disposable e-cigarette, and that ingredient list is comprehensive on the back. I was just at a conference from the manufacturer of that e-cigarette. If there are other compounds or elements in the open system, what we call the e-juice, which is the electronic nicotine juice that you pour in an open system, someone else may have to answer that because I'm not familiar with those kinds of products. I'm just familiar with the closed systems and so forth. In terms of your comment on manufacturers disclosing ingredients, some U.S. senators did ask, I think, 9 or 10 major manufacturers for ingredient lists. It's my understanding some of those manufacturers did disclose that. But that's one of the areas that the Food and Drug Administration has the authority to regulate, is to have ingredient disclosures. They already require that for cigarettes, roll-your-own, and smokeless tobacco products. So it's my thought that the current proposed regulations being considered by the FDA and the White House OMB would probably have ingredient disclosures in them, and that'd be a federal level and uniform across the country. So that will be coming, but you have to allow the regulatory process to, you know, play out and be concluded by the FDA.
So, Mr. Brandt, are you suggesting that we treat the closed systems and the open systems differently in our regulations here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, no. I just don't know enough about the open systems to answer the questions which may lead you to determine how to regulate them. Someone else might be able to help you, you know, understand that, because I'm not familiar with the open systems.
Okay. Further questions of the witness? Next, we have...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Jesse Griffin? And I see Capo Rick is coming up with you, so welcome to the Minnesota Senate, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair.
Whoever wants to begin.
Start. Okay. Thank you for allowing me to testify here today. My name is Jesse Griffith, and I am an owner of a local vapor product retailer named Smokeless Smoking. I want to tell you, first off, that we support a large amount of the language of this bill. As a company, we employ multiple measures to keep our products out of the hands of minors and support legislation in that same vein. The only part we take strong exception to is Section 1, which redefines the use of vapor products as smoking for the purposes of the Minnesota Clean Indoor Air Act. Redefining vaping as smoking will have a strong negative impact on vapor products businesses in Minnesota. The proponents of Section 1 would have you believe that it will be business as usual for vapor retailers. However, there are many municipalities within our state in which the sampling of tobacco products inside tobacco stores is not permitted due to local ordinance. Even though these municipalities may not consider vaping to be the same as smoking, Section 1 would force their hand, and they will have banned vaping in vape shops simply because they have previously banned smoking in tobacco stores. This action will have been taken under the guise of public health, though there are no studies which support that position, and in fact there are many peer-reviewed, published studies which support the position that secondhand vapor poses no meaningful risk to bystanders, as you've heard others testify. I'll point out here that electronic cigarettes have been on the market since 2007, with studies being conducted regularly since 2009. There has been plenty of research. That research simply does not support our opposition's narrative, so they dismiss it and say that there hasn't been enough. I want to take a little bit of time and tell you about the history and the current state of our business. On July 4th, 2009, I purchased my first electronic cigarette device. Though I didn't quit smoking tobacco cigarettes immediately, and for a while was what others have referred to as a dual user, the mere fact that I was cutting down rapidly showed me a lot of promise. A few months later, I bought what was to be my last pack of cigarettes. I was so surprised that this alternative was working where all other attempts had failed that I consulted my wife about opening a kiosk to sell these things. We took what little money we had in our savings and opened a kiosk in Burnsville Center in November of 2009. We didn't have any sort of budget for marketing, so we knew that it would take other success stories like my own to propel the word of mouth about what we were doing. We also knew that if word of mouth didn't spread, that we would most likely fail. Most of our customers from this time were middle-aged smokers, men and women who had smoked for decades and were desperate for an alternative. Many of these customers found success, and word of mouth did spread. In our first year, we tallied that at least 75% of all of our new customers came by way of referral. We took this statistic as a sign that our model was viable, and more importantly, that e-cigarettes were working for people in a way that other options had not. Fast forward to today. Our little kiosk has grown into 6 physical retail locations, including 4 brick-and-mortar stores in the greater Twin Cities area. Smokeless Smoking now employs 34 Minnesotans, 90% of which are full-timers. Our payroll puts over $75,000 a month in Minnesotans' pockets, and we offer health insurance to our staff as well. We are members of the Chambers of Commerce in every city in which we operate a store. We generate roughly $15,000 per month for the state in sales tax. And because we are also an e-liquid manufacturer and exporter, we've brought over $150,000 into the state so far this calendar year. These numbers may be humble compared to some, but we are just one mom-and-pop company. There are many more like us in the state, and our ranks are growing on a weekly basis. If you pass a version of this bill which contains Section 1, it will make it harder for businesses like ours to thrive. These businesses will be inclined to refocus their efforts out of state, and more importantly, you will be sending the unfounded message to the public that vaping is the same as smoking tobacco, which, as we know, is the number one cause of preventable death on our planet. And if they're the same thing, why not just smoke instead? You may very well be sending consumers back into the arms of big tobacco and to the implications thereof. I would be happy to take any questions the committee might have for me, even on subjects brought up by our opposition, which are not addressed in the bill, such as manufacturing standards, child safety measures, in packaging, as well as appropriate labeling. And thank you for your time and consideration.
Questions of Mr. Griffin. Mr. Ulrich, did you wish to? Senator Jensen, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to ask the same question that I asked earlier. Is you mentioned that you do what you can to keep it out of the hands of youth. Why?
Mr. Chair, or I'm not sure if I got that in the right order. I'm sorry. I'm not sure about the.
No, you're fine. Just
thank you. Thank you.
Say hello to me first,
Well, we don't believe our products are appropriate for minors. One of the things that we notice, because we talk to a lot of customers about their experience as being a smoker and their hopes to become, or to consider themselves a non-smoker, which, may be up for debate depending on who you ask. If a person who vapes that doesn't use tobacco cigarettes is still a smoker, most of us do not consider ourselves smokers. But in talking to those people, one of the things that, and a lot of studies will confirm this, that we found out is that almost everybody starts smoking at the age of right around 14. If you made it till 18, it would seem that there's no chance at all that you would start smoking. But it's, of course there is a chance, but very limited. Our product has nicotine. It is meant to be a supplement for cigarettes that doesn't carry the same risks. And so we don't want to be in the business. And, I can only speak for our company, and I also represent a league of businesses, and I could speak for them as well, I suppose, that we don't want to be in the business of getting anyone addicted to nicotine. We want to provide people an alternative to cigarettes that they feel a need for.
Mr. Chair, I think I have a possible amendment, or I have an amendment. I can either do it now or later, but that way they can maybe.
I think Mr. O'Rourke could. I might want to say a few words before the amendment, if that'd be all right with you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Cap O'Rourke, and I am here representing the Independent Vaping Retailers of Minnesota, of which Mr. Griffith is a founding member. IVR is Association of Retailers, Manufacturers, and Distributors of Vaping Products that are all based in Minnesota. My clients are not tobacco companies. We are businessmen and women who believe in providing safe products that are reliable and meet the expectations of our clients. It's appropriate this bill is finally being heard in the Commerce Committee, because despite what many of the supporters may say about this bill, it is more a business bill related about business and commerce than it is about health. The supporters of this bill continue to say that it is motivated by health concerns, and let me address a few of those points. Through the first 6 committee hearings that I've sat through, and now this one, there has been testimony related to these health concerns. they will say things, they have said things as these products contain heavy metals. There have been trace amounts of heavy metals, as there is with the FDA-approved Nicotrol inhaler, which operates in much the same way. There have been no studies to this point showing harmful levels of any heavy metals or any other chemical in vaping mist or carcinogens. We do not know the ingredients of these solutions. While all of Minnesota's major manufacturers of vaping solutions list the ingredients on their labels, in not one hearing has there been an amendment or a motion to change this. After this bill passed, you will still not know the ingredients of the solutions due to regulations, only by the businessmen and women who choose to put them on there. We do not know how much nicotine these devices contain. Yet again, despite the fact that all Minnesota manufacturers list their nicotine content, there has been no attempt to require this or make this information available to the public. They can be mixed anywhere, including the trunk of a car. All of Minnesota's major manufacturers have set aside clean rooms for mixing their solutions. Yet, once again, despite raising this as a point numerous times, there is no proposed remedy. Finally, we've learned recently that the spike in calls to poison control due to exposure to e-cigarette solution containing nicotine. It should be noted that the majority of these were simply calls, and only a few needed treatment, and there were no deaths. And again, my clients are all either currently or in the process of switching over to safety caps. But once again, the advocates have not actually proposed using safety caps on these products to make it more difficult for small children to access the nicotine. Section 1, which is the only section my clients oppose, eliminates vaping from all public spaces. This includes not only bars and restaurants, but office buildings, common spaces of housing units, and even some home businesses. It does so without any scientific evidence, and in fact, the most recent peer-reviewed study stated that there is no evidence harm to anyone that is standing near a vaping mist, as Mr. Bryan pointed out. For those to say that this bill is a health-related bill, they are clearly not talking about the health of my clients and their customers, because there's been no effort to resolve any of the concerns that they themselves raise. If these products do not provide, if there's no scientific evidence that these products provide health concerns, then there's no reason why big government should step in and tell businesses how to run their business. I can tell you with certainty that thousands of Minnesotans have chosen to vape or use e-cigarettes as an alternative to cigarettes. These are people who once smoked 2, 3, and even 4 packs a day. And while the proponents will say that this is simply anecdotal evidence, I can assure you that to the people who use the e-cigarettes that are no longer smoking, the dollars they're saving and the way they are feeling is not anecdotal. I would urge you members to take a look at what has passed in the House bill, which has taken it so that the vaping and e-cigarettes will be prohibited in state-owned buildings. If that is what the legislature wants to do with state-owned buildings, that is their decision. But telling small business owners and businessmen and women around the state how to run their business without any scientific backing is going too far.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there anything in this bill that prohibits you from selling the product?
There is nothing in this bill that prohibits you from selling the product.
So if we pass this and leave Section 1 in, the people that are selling it now currently, there would be no change to the process of being able to sell this product.
Well, actually, there would be a change, because there are some places. This goes back to the patchwork argument that has been made in some committees. And if this bill passes, you will still have a patchwork of regulations around the state. Some cities allow sampling to happen within tobacco rooms, and some don't. Some have gone so far as to clarify that sampling extends to vaping products. So a small business owner can sell vaping products, but they can't actually use those products in their own store for their clients to test out. And if a municipality has already passed a tobacco, you can't sample in a tobacco room, and this legislation goes on, you will not be able to vape in the vape stores in that area.
Senator Jensen.
Mr. Chair, but you're still able to sell it.
Yes, you still are able to sell it.
Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Senator Kosoko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A5 amendment.
Okay, the secretary pass out, the clerk will pass out the amendment. I suppose you could start. Well, discussing the amendment,
yeah, Mr. Chair, as this is coming out, this is, I think, exactly what the testifier was talking about. Compromise language that deletes out Section 1 and then adds back language that gives the state of Minnesota the right to ban e-cigarettes in public buildings. So, in effect, it allows private businesses to do what they want to do. And a couple things, comments of why I support that. You know, I heard testimony pre-committee that we didn't know what was in these e-cigarettes, and yet, you know, I've got one in my hand, and they walked through the actual ingredients that are listed on the back. We do know what's in there. Maybe there needs to be corrections about the two different types of e-cigarettes, but I doubt the author, and I wouldn't recommend that we lay it over and wait, and so I'd rather move forward with this amendment. You know, and secondly, I wasn't aware, and now I am aware, that the FDA is studying these now and may come forward with something that causes us to do something differently. But certainly for the private sector, you know, if they want to have these available, I think they ought to be able to have them available at this point.
Senator Ryder.
Thank you, Chair Metzen.
Ryder.
So I guess the flip side of that argument would be, as we wait to see what the FDA or other smart people in public health come out with, you know, there's an inherent risk of just continuing business as normal. And I appreciate where Senator Gazelka is coming from, and we've been able to find common ground on lots of issues, but I don't think we're going to have it on this one. You know, and Senator Jensen, I appreciate your line of questioning, because I think it was exactly right. If we don't have any concerns about these products, then why agree to any of the other provisions? You know, I think agreement to the other provisions is tacit acknowledgement that there are some concerns. And I would prefer to address those concerns, and this is where we have honest disagreements around public policy, with a framework that we already know works, that Minnesotans already understand, and that we have lived under for several years now quite successfully. And, you know, and I'll bring that position coming from a battleground community. You know, Duluth was one of the communities that went forward with a smoking ban before the rest of the state was. In fact, there are a couple Duluthians in the room who will remember that my support of the smoking ban cost me my first election to the city council, and that's fine. It was a tough a vote at that time, and as someone mentioned earlier, fast forward several years and it's a non-issue. So, you know, respectfully, I'll disagree with my friend Senator Gazelka and argue that the way to proceed is with a model that is the model we already have in place.
Senator Lance, did you wish to hear your question? Further discussion on the A1 amendment, or the A5 amendment would delete Section 1. Further discussion. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I don't think there's been any dispute whether or not nicotine is addictive and whether or not we want to keep it out of the hands of kids. That doesn't seem to be the controversial point of the bill. But I guess the question is whether or not the vapor expelled is a inherent risk to the air quality for those around us. And, you know, as Senator Goodwin said, there are studies that suggest it's really not. I think this is a good compromise to say that we will allow private businesses to determine what they want to enforce. And that was my line of questioning with Mr. Lewis. But yet we have the right to say what can happen within state-owned buildings. So I think this is a good compromise, and I would encourage the committee to support it.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for a roll call.
Senator Goodwin. There will be a roll call. Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, when I looked up the studies that were cited in this, or the places that were cited in here as having studies, the Center for Disease Control has some studies in relation to the youth use of e-cigarettes, and JAMA has a study that they cited in their October 13th, 2013 version. That's an Australian study that talks about how e-cigarettes doubled the ability to quit smoking when compared to patches. And the U of M has a tobacco control. The U of M tobacco control has a study that they're starting on smokeless tobacco research, but it doesn't say anything about e-cigarettes. So I'm not saying that, you know, my search was so extensive that there might have been things I didn't find, and I'd be more than happy to be proved wrong on that. That there are studies that say this, but in the meantime, I want to make sure that when we get testimony in committees that it's very accurate testimony, and that if there's studies to be cited, that we get a chance to see those studies rather than just say there are studies that show. I guess my background as a researcher is just coming out again, but I would like to see the actual citations of studies that have been done because I can't find them.
Further discussion. Senator Latz, then we're getting close, I think.
Mr. Chairman, just to add one additional element. Is that, you know, private businesses, you know, have a certain amount of latitude already in our society, but we have an awful lot of regulations around what they can do in their private business to protect the health and safety of their employees. And if the business owner were to decide that he or she were going to allow indoor use of vaping, it's not the employee's decision, but the employee would be exposed to whatever is in the solutions. And I suspect that we don't know everything that's in solutions. We don't have any testimony about what's in these self-mixed solutions. Mr. Griffin didn't hand out his ingredient list during his testimony. But if you work in a hotel, or if you work in a restaurant, if you work in a bar, if you work in a VFW, I'm not sure that you want to be forced to choose between a job, keeping your job, or being exposed to some unknown array of chemicals that are being carried into the atmosphere by the propylene glycol that's as it's vaporizing and being distributed by the air handling system throughout the entire building. So, another reason, I think, to vote against the A5 amendment.
Other discussion? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, as I look at the Clearway brochure and information that they gave, I know there's at least 13 citations. Half of them cite studies that show the dangers of e-cigarettes in various ways or forms and the addiction. And, you know, I'm going to just go back to error on the side of safety on this. You know, I think about my own children, age 14, 11, and 8, and when I lit up an e-cigar in my kitchen after my brother gave me an e-cigar, which has 1,000 puffs, by the way, there's still 998 left.
Did you get dizzy? No.
My children were horrified that, what, you know, that I was smoking, and that modeling is what I'm concerned of. So I'd rather put this under the same umbrella as our regular Indoor Clean Air Act. I just I saw something in Sunday's paper about, you know, that is a gateway to actual using real cigarettes when children see that or are using that. So I'm going to err on the side of caution on this. I do believe that our vendors will still be able to sell, and I do believe that they can be a cessation device, but I'm gonna err on caution on this just for my own children. Thank you.
Okay, Secretary will take the roll on the A1.
A5.
Excuse me, A5. I keep getting confused with the section one. Article 1.
Brown.
Yes.
Carlson.
No.
Dahl.
No.
James.
No.
Gazelka.
Yes.
Goodwin.
Yes.
Housley.
Yes.
Jensen.
No.
Latz.
No.
Pappas.
No.
Pratt.
Yes.
Reinert.
No.
Metzen.
Yes. My scorecard says there being 6 ayes and 7 nays, the amendment does not prevail. Further discussion on the bill. May I have a senator would like to move the bill? Senator Reinert. moves that Senate File 2027 be recommended to pass. We've gone through two committees already. Is there a...
Three
already? Counting today?
This is the fourth committee.
Oh, my gosh. You do a lot of work then. Where does it go anywhere now? It goes to the floor, does it?
Yes.
Okay, that's incorporated into the Reinhart motion. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you for your
Thank you
hard
very
work.
Much. Appreciate it.
Are we adjourned? Oh, yes. Wednesday.
How many of us liquors
are
What do we got? We have a couple of interesting bills on Wednesday. Meeting's adjourned.